Welcome to the Creative Agency Account Manager Podcast. I'm Jenny Plant, and I'm on a mission to help account managers understand the agency business and develop an entrepreneurial mindset in their role so they can show up as a commercially aware advisor to their clients rather than a reactive order taker. Welcome to episode 111. This episode will be particularly relevant for you if you're heading up the agency or you're in charge of an agency team. Maybe you're a client services director heading up the client service team, for example. I'll introduce Alison in a moment, but basically Alison shares some data-backed insights, some brilliant tips, and very actionable strategies for high-performing teams. She shares why agency teams typically end up not working well together and how to address the issues, why creating a workshop culture is a solution to better collaboration and teamwork, how to make all the meetings you have, both internally and with clients, more efficient and effective. And I give her specific examples of meetings that we would typically have, her five-pillar framework for implementing a workshop culture in your agency, and lots more. What I love about talking to Alison is everything she says is backed up with evidence and data. So you know what she's suggesting actually works. Let's go over to the intro now. Well, I'm very, very proud of my friend Alison Coward, who I've invited back on the podcast because she's just launched a new book. Alison is the founder of Bracket, a consultancy that partners with ambitious, forward-thinking companies to help them build high-performing and collaborative team cultures. She is a culture strategist, a workshop facilitator, a coach, a trainer, a keynote speaker. If you've ever seen her speak, you'll know how good she is. And she's authored two books, A Pocket Guide to Effective Workshops, and her latest book, which is Workshop Culture, A Guide to Building Teams That Thrive. Her clients include Google, Meta, World Federation of Advertisers, Wellcome, and V&A. And with 20 years experience working in, leading, and facilitating creative teams, Alison is passionate about finding the balance between creativity, productivity, and collaboration so that teams can thrive and do their best work together. A very warm welcome back, Alison.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on again. I was super impressed with the book and I'm really dying to get into the questions because I know how much value you're going to share. So some agency owners or maybe client services directors are listening to this. They may be struggling currently to get their teams working well together. In your experience, why does this lack of cohesion happen in the first place?
It's such a good question. And this does sound like a very, very basic answer. But really, the reason that I think team cohesion, or I often see actually that team cohesion doesn't happen, is because attention isn't paid to it. So a lot of people think that you put people together and they're just going to collaborate and they're just going to get on, and you don't really need to work at how you work together. You don't need to talk about how you collaborate. And even more than that, sometimes people will say, okay, well, the team cohesion stuff, us getting to know each other, actually should happen outside of work. That's when we, you know, go out for a meal, or we go, you know, to the bowling alley, or we do something social together. And that's like the team building. But then when we're in work, we do work together and they're kind of separate activities. And so when people haven't paid attention to it and haven't put the time and the resources into building teams within the context of work and within the context of workplace, then that's when cohesion can really fall down. I mean, you know, of course, like anything, you can put people together and it can just be magic and people can gel. But more often than not, we really do have to put the work in. And it's not just about, you know, people liking each other and getting on. It's really about looking at how those relationships form around the work they need to do together. So, of course, you know, respect and trust are a massive part of building a great team. And then also looking at, well, what is it that we want to achieve together as a team? What do we each bring? And having conversations around that so that, you know, you can really make sure that everyone is working individually and collectively together. And as I say, I think that a lot of people don't realise that it's something that needs to pay attention to and you need to actively, you know, put work into. And then the second thing is, I don't think people know how to do it. It's a really tricky thing to do. It's like, well, okay, so let me get past the fact that I don't know that I need to do it. I do know that I need to do it, but where do I start?
Yeah.
So that's the next thing.
Do you find that this kind of lack of a strategy, let's say, for people working together exists both in big corporations as well as kind of mostly sort of independent agencies that are probably typical listeners to this?
100% everywhere. It exists everywhere. Yeah, I mean, you know, the work that we've done at Bracket, we have worked with sort of, you know, as you mentioned, large corporations and smaller creative digital agencies. And the dynamics are the same. Although, I mean, of course, like those different companies are facing different challenges, but the principle still lies that if collaboration is a big part of what you do, which it is for most of us, then you need to put the work into making sure that collaboration works.
And just another kind of side question. If a company was deciding that, you know, that totally makes sense. And when you said it happens outside of work, we assume, even as you're saying that, I can remember in my working career, it has that connotation. Do you think companies generally need a company-wide strategy and then department strategies? We're probably going to get into more of the details, but just as a top line.
It's both.
Is it both? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. Obviously depends on the size of the company, because if you're an independent agency of 10 people, then that is your team, right? But, you know, a company of, you know, say, let's say 60 people will have a culture at the company level. And then each department, each team, that culture or the principles for that culture should feed into that team. But that team is also going to have its culture based on the people in it and the work that they need to do. I mean, I say this in the book Workshop Culture, that of course it makes it so much easier if everyone across the company, and particularly at the top of a company, has bought into this idea of culture development. At the same time, if you're a leader of a team where, you know, outside of your department, culture is not a priority, you can still do some work within your team or within your department to build that culture. I mean, there is, you know, a limit to as far as you can go, but you can still make an impact on what happens on a daily basis, how people feel about their work coming in on a daily basis, how that team works together. And you can also start to influence other teams that you're working with by the way that you're working with those other teams through being intentional again about those interactions. I mean, I have seen this happen where it's almost like, you know, a team really does a lot of work on their culture, and because they've become so cohesive, they're working really well together, and they started to look at the relationships they're having with teams outside of that department. Those teams are kind of looking in and thinking and, you know, asking, what is it that you're doing? We want a bit of that.
Well, it's interesting because as you're talking, I'm thinking this could apply to maybe a client services director who's listening to this, and they've got their own account management team. So that's quite inspiring. What do you think is the impact on the agency's business if the team aren't happy, engaged, kind of working well together?
Oh, gosh, there's so many things. We can talk about retention. We can talk about productivity. We can talk about engagement. I mean, look, in the short term, the very, very short term, it doesn't have an impact, right? We've got a project or we've got a client that we need to deliver something for, and we're just going to kind of work all hours and we're just going to get the thing done. We're not going to talk about relationships. We're just going to get the task done. In that kind of short-term basis, yeah, you can get away with not thinking about culture. But if you want to build a team for the long term that continues to serve that client, it continues to serve other clients over a period of time, a team that stays together for longer. And so, you know, all of that intelligence that they've built from working with that client stays within your team. It doesn't kind of go elsewhere. People that, you know, are not only almost like a virtuous circle, you know, they're doing good work and they like the work that they're doing, then helps them to do more good work, which then encourages them to help. You know, it's that kind of spiral, that upward spiral. So when you do put work into it, it really does make a difference. And I know that initially, you know, I work with a lot of leaders, I work with a lot of teams, and I know that initially this feels overwhelming to get started, but it's kind of like anything. It's, you know, when you lay the foundations up front, it gets easier. The longer you leave it, the harder it's going to be, but the earlier you can do it and you start to seed those conversations around, we are a team that focuses on our culture, then it becomes easier further down the line.
Just out of interest, because I know you've worked not only with the big sort of tech companies, but also lots and lots of different agencies of different sizes. What do they come to you initially with? Like, what are the symptoms where things are going wrong that are sort of typical of agencies?
Yeah, I mean, it's all sorts. I would say that particularly over the last few years, one of the things that's happened a lot is teams are just experiencing a lot of change, whether that is, you know, people leaving, people joining, team restructures, organizational restructures, and the shift to hybrid working and trying to figure that out, new people coming into the workplace. You know, I think the last few years have really given us almost a microscope to look at how we individually work. And now we're starting to bring that into work more. So I think that awareness and the complexities that brings encourages people to kind of get in touch. On a more basic level, sort of more generally, it's really, you know, I think a lot of the conversations are around, we want to make sure that our team are doing the best work that we can. And we're just experiencing like a few little bumps. It could be interpersonal conflict. It could be, you know, miscommunication. It could be low productivity. And it's just these kind of little things that they want to tweak and kind of smooth out, that they know that if they were to sort out, then it would take their work from that level to the next level up.
Makes total sense. And let's sort of introduce the concept of workshop culture, because I'm interested to know how you first discovered that workshops are the solution to better collaboration and teamwork.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's worth just explaining that there was a time in Brackett's history where, you know, I used to facilitate all types of workshops, strategy workshops, away days, creativity workshops, innovation workshops, business model workshops. And so that was my thing, facilitation. It's like anytime you needed to get a team together to discuss something, I'm your person, bring me in, I can help you make that discussion more productive. And I think there's almost like two sides to the coin. I think one aspect of it was when I was working with a particular client, and actually I talk about this in the book, so working with a particular client, and they brought me in to facilitate a workshop around values. And that workshop went really well. And then they asked me to come in and do another workshop. And that workshop went really well. And just also to say, the first workshop that I ran with them, they'd never experienced anything like that before. They were a very traditional company. All of their big meetings were like a long conference table. It really was about, you know, the person that was the most senior or the most vocal or the loudest, they were the people that had the most airtime. So this idea of kind of coming in, using post-it notes, getting them working more collaboratively in sort of little buzz groups, using the flip chart, getting them to kind of, you know, creative brainstorming was just completely mind-blowing for them. So that kind of opened the door for them to invite me in to do another workshop and then another workshop. And I started to notice that every time I went to run a workshop with them, the barrier to entry to getting them into these workshop exercises was lower. They would get into the mode more rapidly. And I was like, okay, so something's going on here, because they're starting to get used to this way of working. And then the other thing as well was that I'd noticed just through my conversations that they were starting to have different types of conversations in between the workshops as well. So it was starting to open up the communication in between the sessions that I was running. And I was like, okay, something's going on here, because they weren't working like this before I was running those series of workshops, but something has opened up. It may be because they've heard from more people around the room and they've spotted more connections. It's like, oh, you know, Jane said something and I didn't know Jane knew that, so I'm going to go and talk to Jane about that idea that she had. I don't know, just the fact that it opened up people more and sort of relaxed people more, and they kind of saw more opportunities for creative problem solving. And it was really interesting, actually, because that particular client had brought me in to facilitate another session with some of their partners. And it was quite funny because they were teaching their partner how to use like the post-it notes and how to do the buzz groups in that workshop. So that was when I knew sort of a breakthrough had been made, when they were actually kind of teaching this way of working. So there was that. And then the other thing was that as someone who, you know, went from team to team facilitating these one-off workshops, I was personally getting a little bit frustrated at the end of those sessions, because even though the sessions themselves went really, really well and they were enjoyable and they were transformative for teams and they got lots of ideas, as when I left, I didn't know, beyond the write-up that I provided, the summary of the write-up, I didn't know what the team were going to do with those ideas. Were they going to implement them? Were they just going to go into a metaphorical drawer and never to be kind of seen again? And I realized that really my passion was around what people, you know, the workshops are a great format, but my passion really was around how teams got together to implement those ideas afterwards and how those workshops could change the way that they were working. So for me, I was looking at the workshops, I was like, yeah, we get collaboration, creativity, all the things that we want from our teams on a day-to-day basis in workshops. So actually, it's a real big shame that that ends at the end of a workshop and people just go back to their desks and start working in a way that they were before. So how can I extend that feeling of a workshop beyond the end of a workshop. And that's where the idea of workshop culture, knowing that, you know, with my previous client, it's had this impact. That's where kind of the idea of workshop was born.
Oh, so workshop culture, like, what is it exactly? How do you see that continuity piece? Because I'm sure a lot of agencies are listening to this thinking, oh, there's lots of different sort of maybe problems we've got across the business that we could have a workshop about. But then how do you make it become cultural?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I probably want to start with is what a workshop culture isn't. A workshop culture isn't just running workshops. That's like not a workshop culture. A workshop culture is a team culture that takes the principles and practices of workshops and facilitation and uses them to build high-performing teams. So it's not just about, you know, what happens when we're in a room together. It's what happens in all of our interactions. How do we ask questions of each other? How do we, you know, share our work? How do we make our work visible? How do we make sure that we're hearing from everybody on the team? How do we make sure that we're co-creating ways of working? So, you know, of course, all of those things use the practices of facilitation, but it's also about the principles of it as well.
Love it. And maybe it's a good point to ask you to explain your 5-pillar framework that's in the book, which kind of sets out the kind of roadmap for how to do this.
Yeah. So the 5-pillar framework is alignment, cohesion, communication, design, and change. And it's not kind of designed as a step-by-step, although it can be used as a step-by-step. So the principles behind it is alignment. A team needs to be clear on what it is that they're all working towards together. You know, again, you and most of your listeners will be aware that we are busy. We are also busy and we've all got stuff to do and our task lists are just growing and growing and growing. And it can be very difficult to kind of take a step back, take a deep breath and say, oh, wait, are we all pointing in the right direction? And that's where collaboration starts, really. We need to know that we're in it together as a team. We're all clear on what we're trying to achieve together as a team. That team vision is clear. And we start thinking about, well, how do we want to be as a team together? So that's the alignment piece. The cohesion is around the connection between the individuals in the team, both the connections between the individuals in the team and the connection of the individuals to the team vision as well. So it's, you know, what do we all individually contribute and bring to make this team unique and make that vision relevant to us? How do we make sure that, you know, we are individually bringing the skills that we need to reach that vision or, you know, reach our goals? And then it's all about, you know, how the team individually connect with each other through understanding the skills that everyone brings and also appreciating different ways of working. And that's the challenging piece because, you know, I guess the misconception about teams is that it should always be completely harmonious and we have to agree all the time and we should all be working in the same way. Well, actually, that would be a massive shame for collaboration. What we want is we want the diversity within our team because, like, why do we want people that all think alike and have the same skills? We want a diversity of skill set. At the same time, that diversity of skill set and ways of working can sometimes cause conflict because people don't understand different ways of working. So that cohesion piece is really understanding that the value that everyone brings and kind of working through some of those, I guess, little tensions that can sometimes arise. Communication is just that. Are we making sure that we're hearing from everybody on the team? Are we openly sharing about, you know, what needs to be shared about so that we can get our work done, so that we feel included and we feel that we're on top of our work and things are sort of moving along nicely? Design is around, you know, very connected to communication. Design is around creating ways of working that are very specific to the team, based again on who's in the team, what that team needs to get done, and almost kind of systems, processes, routines, and rituals that help that team to stay connected together and to thrive. So what is it that we need to create in our team to make sure that everybody is working individually in the best way for them, but we are also working collectively in the best way for the team? And then the final piece, change, is around doing this continuously. You know, there will be things that come up for teams, whether that is a client crisis or a new client or a new idea or someone joining the team or someone leaving the team or something in the wider business that's happening that will affect the way that the team works. It may be that all of those routines and rituals that you've created, you're going to need to reset because they won't work for the current time that you're in. And so the change piece is around being able to have those conversations. Team culture is something that we're constantly working on. We need to continuously improve, understanding, you know, how much we may have developed habits that may not be working for us, and knowing how we actually undo those habits, because it's all about sort of behaviour change.
This is such a comprehensive kind of approach to any process, isn't it? Or any, just as you were talking, I was thinking there's so many different ways that you can apply this. And I suppose that's the point, isn't it? It's the culture of working together. I would love you to sort of get a little bit granular for those listening, because obviously we have lots of account managers that are listening. And I thought it would be quite interesting to sort of try to think through this framework in the context of one or two meetings that they would typically be invited or inviting their clients to. And I suppose the first question is, presumably this model for workshop culture can apply to any meeting, whether that's internal or with a client. Is that right?
Yeah.
So for example, most agency account managers, they're running either weekly or fortnightly project update meetings. Mm-hmm. And these are typically with clients. They're typically 30 to 45 minutes. They're usually virtual. And there's often one account manager and one project manager from the agency side, and maybe one or two clients. So thinking through, you know, because I'm sure a lot of account managers are approaching these meetings on autopilot. Mm. Can you share any tips for how to make sure that they are really effective?
Yeah. So this is probably not going to be a popular answer, but I would encourage your listeners to rethink the idea of a status update and think, what is the best use of us and our clients being in the same space at the same time? How can we make that valuable? And often it's not just reading off a list of this is what we got done, because actually you can share that in another way. What is useful to have a conversation about is, are there any blockers to us moving forward? What new ideas could we generate together? Is there a problem that you're solving that we could brainstorm around today to kind of clear it up? And what's kind of happening in your world? And is there anything that we can help you with? Those kinds of conversations could make that session much more valuable. And, you know, I appreciate that sometimes in order, you know, people don't read anything, do they? So sometimes you might want to, you know, you send a status update to a client and there's some interesting things in there that you want them to read, and you know that they're not going to read them. So sometimes it is valuable to get them in a room just to make sure that they've checked, you know, they have seen what it is that you want to communicate. At the same time, I would debate that doing that every single time for a status update is the best use of everyone's time. I think one of the good ways, this is what I always do when I'm thinking about meetings, is, well, what's the purpose of this meeting? Like, what do we want to achieve from it? Is there anything that we need to produce as a result of this meeting? And what are all the questions that we need to address together in this meeting? And use the questions as your agenda, rather than kind of saying, okay, right, I just need to share these updates with a client. So really making that time together really fruitful. And yeah, just like nourishing. I mean, I did a session like this last week, actually, of, you know, I was working with a session for a group of consultants about how they could shift their client meetings. And that your client meetings are a really good opportunity for you to make a massive impact with them. You know, you want your clients to walk away from the meetings that they have with you thinking, we just got more done in 30 minutes than we have done in the last kind of 6 weeks of trying to sort this problem out ourselves.
Alison, I can't tell you how good those tips were. I really can't. And I'm sure a lot of people are taking notes right now, because you're right. Why have a status meeting where you're talking about ticking boxes when it could be delivered some other way and make that time together a lot more productive and impressive? There was a statistic I'll just share. I mean, you've probably got some as well, but there's a consultancy business called Relationship Audits and Management. They did a survey globally around the marketing manager's time. Mm. And a typical marketing manager spends 7% of their total working week dealing with all of their suppliers. So if you imagine that you are just one of many of those suppliers in that window of their time, their working week, why wouldn't you want to stand out using the tips that you've just shared? Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Let's go to another, if you don't mind, another example, because this is so pertinent. So let's suppose the account manager has identified that there could be a client problem that the agency could solve. So they pull together their internal team and they want to do some kind of brainstorming session to generate additional ideas beyond the current scope with a view to presenting them to the client. So it's a virtual meeting. It's 60 minutes with maybe 3 to 5 internal team members with the idea of coming up with some ideas.
Yeah, so again, I'm going to start with what not to do. Let's kind of get onto that call and start off with, tell me your best ideas for addressing this client problem, because you are just going to be met with silence, rabbit in headlights. It's not the best way to start a brainstorm. And, you know, I get really frustrated that, you know, when you watch these films or like series where they're kind of in a advertising agency, like kitchen, and they've got the flip chart and there's like a massive room of people and they're like, we need ideas, shout out your ideas to me. It's just the worst way to brainstorm, because who's going to shout out the ideas? People who feel confident shouting out ideas, and it doesn't mean that they're the best ideas. So something like that is, again, really thinking about, well, what are the questions that we want to address together in this session, and designing kind of activities that address those questions or groups of questions at the same time. And then also thinking, well, what is going to be the best way for people to contribute? There's going to be, you know, maybe there's some junior people on the team and we've got a senior person on the team. Well, that junior person is going to be very reluctant to speak up before that senior person does. And even if they do, they're not going to want to challenge anything that the senior person said. There's probably, you know, unless hopefully you've got a great culture, but even if you do have a great culture, there's still that kind of power imbalance there. So, you know, you might do things like, I mean, this is really basic stuff, but using a whiteboard where people, virtual whiteboard, where people post up their ideas and giving people, you know, a couple of minutes to do that silently before you talk. It could be, you know, 3 to 5 people. You can definitely still put people in breakout rooms if it's virtual, or if you're in person, you can get people to talk in pairs. I think the other thing as well is, going straight into a brainstorm, do you have ideas for? What are ideas for? Sometimes, again, it really helps to kind of take a step back and think about the bigger picture. So kind of framing the context before you go into generating ideas. It could be, let's look at what's worked so far for the client. Let's look at what we're doing with other clients that's working. Okay, now let's start generating ideas for this specific client. So yeah, a few things there. My first book, A Pocket Guide to Effective Workshops, has got many more specific kind of activities. And there's loads of resources out there for workshop type activities. But I guess the message is don't see brainstorming as a kind of, we just need to do a free for all and we just need to kind of share ideas. It does need to be structured.
Very much of that I loved. And we'll put a link to your other book in there as well, because I think tips and tactics are really handy to have. I think what you just said there about framing the whole conversation, giving it context, you know, what's currently working for our client, what's currently working for our other clients. And as quite a bit of a side question for you, because this is a challenge that I meet lots of agency folk with, they have problems collaborating on sharing, you know, what's working for one account manager and their portfolio of clients versus another account manager. They've both got their heads down working on their own client relationships, but there's not a lot of information sharing, you know, what's working here. I mean, again, would you say that is there a particular forum, would you say, that would be kind of recommended to make sure that they are constantly sharing knowledge?
Yeah, I think that's specific to the team. So for me, when I'm listening to that, hearing that, that comes down to the culture. And it's like, do we want to be an agency that shares kind of practice, shares best practice, shares about our clients, collaborates, like helps each other? And then once you've decided that and agreed that and everyone's on board, what can you create? Whether that is, you know, there's so many ways you could do it. It could be, you know, every time there's a learning from a project, you kind of drop it into a Slack channel. For example, I learned this week. It could be regular lunch and learn sessions. You know, everybody, you know, takes it in turns to present their latest client projects or their latest client wins and shares that. So there's lots of different ways that you could do it. But I think the thing is that it needs to be at the culture level, decided that this is important for us. Otherwise, it's, you know, I've got work to do, which is, you know, also a valid point. You know, I've got things to do, I'm busy, but why would I take time out of my day to share what I know with you, unless I can see that bigger picture, right? The aligned pillar.
Makes total sense. It's going back to what you said initially about having a strategy for this kind of stuff and making it important. And also with the point of sharing best practice within the agency, it becomes a point of difference that they can actually talk about with clients, prospective clients. So love that. All right, final question. Account managers run quarterly strategy sessions with clients. Mm-hmm. They have kind of upstream conversations where the client shares what their business challenge is, their business goal, and then the agency help come up with solutions, ideas, bring additional thinking. Typically, quarterly strategy sessions can take different formats. Some are virtual, some are in person. Where agencies can, they do like to do them in person because it's another opportunity to kind of have a face-to-face. So let's suppose it was a half day face-to-face with some agency team members and several clients. Any thoughts for how to run a face-to-face meeting that's a little bit more effective?
Yeah, I mean, I think all the things that I've mentioned, really, you know, being clear on the purpose, the outputs, the questions. I think with something like this, the differentiator is not just what you do in the session, but what you do after the session. What are you going to do with all of that content and all those ideas and that discussion that the client creates? And that's where the impact is, because again, you know, you can have an impact in how the client feels on the day in that session. You know, it's really great. We've just got, you know, lots of ideas and we've managed to work through a problem that we've been really struggling with internally. And then what next? Is it going to be something that you propose to them? Is it going to be something that you incorporate into your work? Is it going to be something that you help them to deliver themselves? So that momentum and that, I guess, the implementation, that's again where, you know, I think you can have a lot of value from those strategy meetings.
Love that. Thank you so much. That's really, really helpful. I'm sure lots of people have got some ideas there. Can you, Alison, tell us what typically is the kind of company that you work with?
Gosh, I mean, my background before I set up Bracket is in the creative industries. So, I mean, I guess that's quite broad. I love to work with teams that are needing to generate new ideas and deliver on those ideas regularly. So I guess that kind of falls into anyone in the knowledge sector. But generally at Bracket, we tend to work with kind of creative media, tech, digital companies and teams like that within other companies as well. Teams of any size, you know, anything from sort of 5-6 up to, you know, 25-30. You know, we've worked with smaller agencies before as well, senior leadership teams within agencies. So it really varies. I'm always open to a conversation because I'm very passionate about this work. I think the core of what I do at Bracket is I just want people to have good days at work. You know, we spend so much time at work and a lot of our work is about working with other people. And if those relationships are strained or they're not energizing, then it can have an impact on how we feel about our work. And I think that when we have chosen, you know, a lot of us are in a very privileged position to be able to choose the work that we do to some extent. We've kind of, you know, decided on our career. It doesn't make sense that we don't enjoy our work. We really should be creating environments where everyone feels welcome and can do their best work and can thrive. So anybody that is passionate about that as well, I'm happy to chat to.
Amen to that. And I've seen how much feedback you get from clients that you've worked with, and I know the impact that you have on their businesses. So I would urge anyone listening to follow Alison on LinkedIn, Alison Coward. And also, Alison, if someone wanted to have a conversation with you about working together, what's the best way of contacting you and who ideally would that person be?
Yeah, I mean, ideally the team leader. We have a great product that is a really good starter, actually. So I know that team culture can be super overwhelming. There's so many different areas. And I think that's what I mentioned at the beginning is that it's just, if you've decided that you want to take a step in this direction, it's often not easy to know where to start. That was a very convoluted way of saying it's not easy to know where to start. So we have a great product called a team culture diagnostic, where we invite teams to take an anonymous survey where we can assess their culture and we can identify the strengths and weaknesses and then kind of give them a bit of a plan as to say, okay, so these areas you're strong, these are the areas that I think you should do a little more work on. So that's a really good starting point for us. So any team leader, any team member, in fact, that kind of wants to drive their culture forward, I'm definitely open for a conversation. Contact me on LinkedIn, Alison Coward. My website is bracketcreative.co.uk. And you can also book a call with me via my website as well.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations again on the launching of the new book. I really am enjoying it. And thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Jenny. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Alison, and you can connect with her on LinkedIn at Alison Coward, and also check out her website, bracketcreative.co.uk, and you can find her book, Workshop Culture, on Amazon. And finally, many agency owners ask me to help their client-facing team with account management. Some don't have dedicated account managers, but they still want predictable client retention and growth, a repeatable client-centric client management process, as well as ultimately a competitive advantage. Because according to Gartner, 80% of your future profits are going to come from 20% of your existing clients. So it makes sense to have everyone who manages the client relationship armed with the right commercial and entrepreneurial skills to keep and grow those precious client relationships. Currently, many of my program participants are just 3 months in and already getting very impressive account growth results. And this is down to them being coachable and also taking action on what we're covering and me supporting them with the implementation. So if you're in charge of a client-facing team, or maybe someone in your team is responsible for account growth and could potentially benefit from upskilling and having a strategy, then check out the details of my 1-year account accelerator training and coaching program. You can find all the details at accountmanagementskills.com. And I look forward to speaking to you on the next one.